Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another fun and amazing episode of Paranormal Talk Radio. I am one of your co-hosts, Matthew J. Haas. And along with me, as always, my partner in crime, Tim Vickers. How you doing today, Tim?
Very good. How are you? I'm excited for the new and fun show tonight.
Yes. And I have a new and improved headset that I've been toying around with this week. So I hope that I sound much better on radio. It's been working out pretty good. I'm excited about the new headset and hoping the audio is good on everybody else's end. I hope I sound good. So I'm happy about that. And we have a great guest tonight. We have Bob Cranmer. And Bob Cranmer is the author of The Demon of Brownsville Road. It's a book about a former politician of Pittsburgh that lived in a house that had terrorized him when he lived in this house. And turns out that they had a demonic haunting, and it was pretty serious because he actually called a pretty renowned exorcist named of Adam Bly, who was actually under the tutelage and under the wing of John Zaffis, as we all know him as a well-known demonologist. So Adam Bly, you know, was taught by John Zaffis and by many other well-known priests that are involved with demonology and things like that. But we've talked about it before. I'm a huge fan of Adam Bly. I love his work. He's very passionate about what he does. He's not into the media at all, except for the one documentary that they did called The Exorcist Files, which he helped this fellow named Bob Cranmer with his situation. And there were pretty intense encounters with demonic activity in his home, and so he called Adam Bly in to help him out, and it turns out that there were some pretty serious stuff going on, and even Adam Bly himself had so-called experiences in this house where he was actually scratched on his head, and he bled, actually cut him open, and he bled from his forehead all the way down, and it was a pretty intense documentary. I suggest you guys check it out. It's called The Exorcist Files, and it was on the Discovery Network. Demons is not something you want to mess with, Tim, right?
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
But I'm told.
The one thing that bothers me about the whole demon situation is everyone is blaming everything on, you know, it's evil. There's a demon here, there's a demon there, there's a demon everywhere. And not for nothing, I mean, as educational as some shows are, but again, you know, as much as I hate to keep bringing them up all the time, a lot of TV shows, and granted, they're doing it for ratings, and I get that, but it's putting the notion into people's heads that there's a lot more evil and demonic haunting is going on than there really is. But let me go by saying that this is a very, very rare thing. I think people don't realize like how rare this is to run into a demonic haunting. Trust me, if you had a demonic haunting on your hands, it's something you don't want to mess with, you know? And I'm sure...
It would be interesting. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say, I'm sure our guest, you know, when he talks about not only his book, but his experiences that he had in his house that he lived in Pittsburgh. He's a former politician of Pittsburgh, of Allegheny County. He was in the military. Let me bring up his bio here for a second so everybody can get a little background on our guest. He was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Army, and he went on to serve 9 years in the active army, several of which as a company commander in the 101st Airborne Division. He also served as the rank of major in the Army Reserve during the Persian Gulf War. He was commanding a military intelligence unit. So this guy has some pretty hefty background. He's got law enforcement background, and he's a former politician of Pittsburgh, where he was part of the Redevelopment Authority of Allegheny and Fayette Counties. So, he's a pretty respectable and credible person. For somebody like him to step forward and kind of say, I've got a demon in my home, or even write about it, I'm sure took a lot of guts. You know, I kind of respect that.
Yeah. So, let me. And this is the person that owned the house.
Yes.
Okay. And so he talks about what happened at his house.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to hear. I like to hear people's with experience like that explain the difference between what they see for hauntings, alleged hauntings, and alleged demons. Like, I wonder what it is. I wonder what the threshold is. Like, how do you go, do you have like a checklist of 10 things? And, you know, when you get, this is a demon. I wonder how that works. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. A lot of these renowned exorcists or demonologists that get involved in these cases, they do a pretty intense investigation. From the impression that I got from a guest that we've had on in the past, we've had Mr. Bishop James Long, who's well known. There are signs to look for. There's like oppression, there's possession, and I forget the other sign, but I don't know. There's a lot of signs. You can get the smell of sulfur. I know there's nasty odors involved. I don't
know. Nasty. Well, yeah, okay.
So
yeah, if you've ever been here when I tried to cook, yeah, that it could be a demon.
So, well, I'm excited to have him on as our guest. Like I said, I watched the documentary. It sounds pretty believable. I'm not saying, it is or it isn't. You gotta watch it for yourself. Be your own judge. You could catch it on YouTube. He actually has a lecture on YouTube where he speaks about his experiences, which I think is pretty cool. I'm going to throw the link in the chat room, even though Mary Lou's the only one in the chat room. But
yeah, I'm glad. I like Mary. I'm glad she came to listen.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping by tonight, Mary. Mary Lou, she likes to be called. Anyway, I don't know. What's going on, Tim?
Same old, buddy. just reading, setting up, getting ready to work on something. You know, you saw what Bill did with the batteries. I'm going to set up something just a little bit different for an experiment with that.
Are you working alongside Bill Hyland?
No. No, but we, together, you know, we kind of emailed back and forth and came up with an idea of ways to test the allegations.
Well,
you know, or the claims of ghosts, you know, haunted places, draining batteries. So we'll see how it goes.
What's your opinion on that so far? Like,
what do I think? I think it's coincidental, but, you know, I'm ready to throw it up there and see what happens, you know, and let the numbers speak for themselves. And, you know, like, I plan on putting it out there for everybody to see.
Right.
So they can see exactly what I did. And if they want to, they can redo it themselves and see what they get.
Well, my thing with that is, I obviously batteries can drain. You're going to have faulty batteries in some packages, you know, you get manufacturing, defects, you know, once in a while, you know, you get a package, you get a couple of batteries that aren't working. What I tend to do on investigations, Tim, I don't know if you guys do this, but I'm sure a lot of people do because of this theory or idea that ghosts and spirits drain batteries. I tend to make sure that all of our equipment or whatever devices that we plan to use have fresh batteries.
Yeah.
And, you know, this way I know for sure, you know, they're fresh and that if there is a drainage, you know, then it can be questionable. You know?
Yeah, well, and I'm going to try to rule that out the best I can, which I'm, you know, probably no matter what I do, it's going to be, you know, a small sample. But my first thought is just getting a package of, you know, a very large pack. If I can get a pack of batteries that are, you know, 25 or 50. I don't even know if they sell them in 50. I don't know who would buy it. Unless you're a survivalist, then maybe you would want a pack of 50 batteries. But, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to divide them just randomly. I'm just going to divide them in two groups and take, you know, several out and do a pretty standardized test for it and just put them on a tester and see how long it takes for them to lose their energy, and then go from there and see what happens. So hopefully, by using more than just three or four, I'll be able to, you know, rule out if anything is, you know, because if you use a couple batteries, you know, you don't know. But then again, when you use like 25 or 50, it's going to eat up a lot of time. So hopefully, if I use 50 of them, one of them pops out and goes bad, you know, I could kind of probably say, yeah, you know, there's the crazy one that people usually get. But, you know, if I put it in an alleged haunted location and, you know, a very significant part of them drains quick, then it is what it is, you know, regardless of my belief, you know, or what I think it is, if they drain quick.
But here's the thing that I have with that is, how can you measure or collect data telling if there's a ghost or a spirit actually draining them when there is an extensive amount of drainage in an alleged potential, you know, place of activity? Like, what are the tools or what things are you, what we can use to actually measure, you know, what's going on with the drainage?
That's a great question. And what I'm doing is I'm only looking at the claim that batteries die quicker in a haunted location.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do die quicker, I won't put you know, I'm just going to say it happened. This is where it happened. I don't know why it happened. I'm just saying that it did happen. And just kind of get that look at it to see if it actually does.
Cool.
Yep. So I won't assign a cause to it. Or, you know, I won't speculate on a cause. I'll just say, you know, put these there. This is what happened. and maybe we can come up with an idea to test what happened.
Right, right. You should definitely compare notes with Bill Hyland, because I know he's been experimenting with that idea and theory as well.
Well, his came up, you know, his showed a significant drop in his. He went to a graveyard, I believe.
Yes.
Versus another place. And actually, you know, he said it was quite, he wasn't thinking it was going to work. Like, it was pretty surprising to him. So, you know, now I want to try something, see what we get. So I'm going to try something a little different, and then I'm going to send him my information, and then he's going to send me his information, and I'm going to try to redo his, and he's going to try to redo mine.
Cool. Sounds interesting and fun.
Yeah.
Put
it to the test. Yeah. That's the fun stuff.
Well,
that's the fun stuff.
That's been part of my issue with the paranormal community and the field, that there's not enough people doing that. Like, let's take all this idea that we currently have with the current equipment that we are using, and let's test the validity of these devices. You know, like, I don't see enough people testing anything or researching the devices. There's a lot of groups and teams out there who are just assuming because another group is using it, or they've seen it work on TV, or, you know, it's just an idea or a theory that's out there, so they think it works because of an idea or a theory. But nobody's actually taking it home like Kenny does, or like what Bill does, who actually take the device and brings it home with them, or they ask somebody to send it to them. You know, they ask somebody to volunteer, can you, you know, give me a piece of equipment that I can experiment with, you know.
Can I tear it apart?
Yeah, let me tear it apart and see what this thing is made of and what it's meant to design to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, face it, I mean, some of those could be very daunting. Like, how would you set up an experiment for some of the claims? But, you know, that's part of the fun for me. That's part of the challenge.
Yeah.
Is thinking of it.
That's the fun part, though.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
And I don't, yeah, and I don't know, you know, I don't know necessarily if you can always test an entire claim.
No.
But there's nothing that says you have to test an entire claim. You can break some claims down into little bits and test some of their foundations to see if the foundation of the claim holds testing. And, you know, and if, you know, it, I think you could reasonably look at if you find a few things that are foundations of claims that don't support the claim, you could at least make a fairly educated guess that, you know, if what the claims are based on don't work, then probably the claim doesn't work either.
Mm-hmm. And I love the, you know, the devices that purely say, that have a label on them, this is designed strictly for entertainment purposes only. I will stay away from a device that says for entertainment purposes only. Am I going to prove to a client who's scared out of their mind or wants to know what's going on in a home or a museum that this weird activity is going on, and we're using devices that say, you know, this is for entertainment, how are you proving anything?
You can ask, was it entertaining when I was here? Yeah, you guys were great. A lot of fun. So thank you, but we'll be here all weekend. You know, don't forget to tip your ghost hunters. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Stand up ghost hunting. That's what we could do. We're just talking and coming up with million-dollar ideas here. Stand up ghost hunting. We could do stand up acts for homeowners while we look for ghosts. We're great, man. We are smart. We need to quickly market this so nobody else gets this idea.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Or what about house cleaning ghost hunting? We'll clean your house while we hunt for ghosts.
Right.
I actually bet that will probably go over really well. I would probably, regardless of how crazy some of the theories or hypotheses are about ghosts, I'm like, yeah, whatever, just come over and clean my house. Yeah, run the Blinky beepy thing. That'll be fine. Yeah, don't forget the Windows.
And I don't know, we might have to start charging people.
Well, yeah, well, that, yeah, completely. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Moneymaker.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And then we have Kenny's rant this week, which I thought was pretty funny. You know, I hope he doesn't mind me bringing this up on our show, but I'm sure he's talked about it on Ghosts and Geeks on YouTube. But, yeah, he had a group doing some kind of public ghost hunt, and they sent him an email. I guess they sent out, like, a mass email to, like, anybody who's into the paranormal. They obviously have no clue who Kenny Biddle is, because I don't think they quite expected the response that he sent them in return to their invitation. Needless to say, he won't be going to this public ghost hunt. I just thought it was funny.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. They were charging, like, I think $75 for the ghost hunt. And, you know, Kenny was nice and professional, as always, and sent, like, a list of questions to them regarding, you know, what's your claims, you know, how did you come across this place having activity, what were your methods, what kind of devices did you use, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, serious, legit questions. And I'm going to just kind of go out on the limb saying I'm not sure what the other end, how they reacted, but I'm going to just go say they probably didn't react very well to his questioning. Because like I said, a lot of the times, I don't know, a lot of the times people get defensive when people start questioning other paranormal investigators. Because then, in my opinion, I think in their head, they're thinking, well, who is this guy? You know, what's his background? Why is he questioning me, you know, this way or with these particular questions about what we're doing? And you understand what I'm saying? Like, so I think in a way, a lot of people just kind of get intimidated right off the bat. And I don't know. I think that's how things kind of get out of hand.
Yeah, well, it's, you know. If you're going to put it out there, you know, prepare yourself to be questioned. I think, I mean, not only is that healthy, I think it's fair. You know, I don't think, you know, accusing somebody, you know, keeping just a nice, easy questioning, and I think it's valid. I think it's a reasonable line of questioning. I have my ideas of why people get upset. But sometimes I get a little confused when I hear or read about a team that sounds very open, and or an individual that sounds very engaging and wants to learn. And then when you question something, you know, you get the hammer for it, as it were. And I don't know. It's kind of getting old, but, you know, at some point, have your stuff together. You know, I mean, if you're going to claim it, have it ready.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm fine with if you claim it and say, this is bizarre. I have no clue what caused this. I have no idea, but this is something out of the ordinary. Here it is. See what you think, and be open to hear. But you know, when you say, "Here it is. This is a ghost. This is a haunting," 100%. You know, we're talking real here. I mean, if you get questioned, don't get upset about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it. Yeah, you said it. You said it. You put it out. Don't be upset.
You know, if you're gonna put it out there, you know, just expect the return.
I would hope, like, if I put something out, I have put stuff out there. I've put stuff out there and, like, begged people to take a look at this and tear it up. I've even put, tear this up. Tell me what's wrong. give me your feedback. Let's hear your questions. And, you know, I honestly, I get very little response because I think that is so strange that people don't know how to approach that, you know, when they read something like, hey, check out this great thing I caught on this ghost hunt. I don't know what it is. You know, do everything for me that you can to tell me a reasonable, rational explanation.
Yeah.
And tear it up, download it, you know, kick it around, pass it around, put it on your website, ask people to take a look at it. I don't care. See what it is. You know, Bill takes me up on it. You know, but Bill's really good at that. Bill likes to do a lot of analysis. There's been a couple that Bill's looked at.
He certainly does.
Yeah, he's good.
He's another guy who I really respect, not only because he's smart, but he crosses it. Well, he dots his I's and he crosses his T's.
Yeah, he is. He's very meticulous. I keep asking him all the time. I'm surprised he's not an engineer. He's got an engineer heart. He really does.
Okie dokie. Well, we're getting down to time to call our guest. You ready for this, Tim? I know this subject scares you.
I'm scared. This is very exciting.
I was sarcastic with that. All right. Well, you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, here we go. Again, those for who are joining us late on tonight's show, we have a really great guest. His name is Bob Kramer. And he's an author to the book called The Demon of Brownsville Road. He was a military lieutenant in the 101st Airborne Division. He was a company commander, and he served in the Persian Gulf War under the United States Army Reserve. And he was a Allegheny County, Pittsburgh politician. And I don't know, he's got a very respectable background. So I can't wait to hear a lot of what happened in this house. And he was on the documentary The Exorcist Files, which is on the Discovery Network. They play it mostly on, I believe, Destination America. They play it there. So if you want to catch it on Destination America, or I'm sure you'll find it on YouTube. I'm sure somebody has it up there. And
also, he has a link to it on his website.
Yep. And I also have a YouTube link on our Facebook page. So you look up Paranormal Talk Radio on Facebook, we have it there as well. Got to check out his... You got to check out his lecture, because it's pretty intense, you know, about what he... what he talks about. Anyway, I'm real excited and honored to have him on as our guest, and so I'm going to dial him in and hopefully get a hold of him, and I don't know, bear with me as I get him in, and fix it on the audio, guys. Like I said, I just got a new headset, and I'm working on the audio, so I'm trying to work out the kinks. So to speak.
Takes a while.
Yeah, it takes a while. Please give us feedback. Let me know how the audio is throughout the show. What parts sounded better. You know, give me a heads up, and I'll try to do my best to correct it. I don't know. Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's even close.
Right. All right. So, I don't know. I have his home and his cell number, Tim. What should I call first?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm gracious that I have both. I'll try his home number first. And it says dialing.
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
Hi, Bob. This is Matthew J. Hoss from Paranormal Talk Radio. How you doing?
I'm fine, Matthew.
All right, cool. I want to just, you know, take the time first, like I always do with all my guests. And thank you so much. We are very pleased and honored to have you on our show, Paranormal Talk Radio. Along with me is my co-host, Tim Vickers, is here also. Tim, if you want to say hello.
Hi. Thank you for coming on to the show.
Sure. Happy. Always happy to be interviewed. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
Well, it's a very fascinating fascinating information. It's going to be very interesting to hear.
Yeah. Bob, I watched you on The Exorcist Files on the documentary, and after watching you on that program on the Discovery Network, I admired your story because it was very intense, and with your background, you know, I explained to our listeners your background. You're a very respectable individual, being a former politician in Pittsburgh. You have a military background. You are a rights officer. You served in the Persian Gulf War, which, you know, I totally respect that. Thank you for serving our country and doing that. And, that's very honorable. So to come out with a story such as yours and the experiences that you had to come forward, I also respect and I commend you for that. So I just want to say that right off the bat.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I think that's an important part of the whole story, which I can get into later during the actual interview. I was never affiliated or so associated or had any real interest in any of this stuff until we were faced with it. And once the whole story played itself out and I kept a record of it, when it was over, I said, "But man, this is nuts. I have to, you know, tell this story because it's all true. And, it happened." As far as my background goes, yes, certainly I think that adds credibility to the story. I know it's really helped locally because, you know, all the folks in Western Pennsylvania, so many people know me and respect me, and I've heard more than once that, you know, they said because I told the story that they believed it. So
right. How did your colleagues and any other person that you worked with in the military or in politics, Did anybody, I guess the question I want to ask is, how did they feel when you came out with this story and your experiences that you went through in this house? How did they rate, what was their first reaction?
Well, you know, the one thing that helped me with the story, and again, I didn't go public with this until I wrote a book, until I got a publisher, and until, you know, the thing was scheduled to be published. Prior to that, you only had a handful of people who actually knew this story. So it's not like I sought publicity when it was happening or even after it happened. Now, one of the individuals in the book, who is a close friend of mine, but at the time happened to be mayor of the city of Pittsburgh. He was mayor of Pittsburgh for 12 years. And he's the one who actually went to the Diocese of Pittsburgh, to Bishop Donald Worrell, who's now Cardinal Worrell, to ask if there was anything that the diocese could do to help us. Now, later on, after the book began to get publicity prior to being published, the Diocese of Pittsburgh, they're the ones who really went public with the story before I did, and went to one of the local, the CBS television station, and they did a 3-night special series on this story and, on what took place at our house. So that's certainly, when you have the current Bishop of Pittsburgh, Bishop Zubik, you know, basically standing beside you, saying, yes, this happened. The diocese verifies it, and it's true. So with that, and with my own reputation, and I think the credibility that I have, so many people in Western Pennsylvania, in the tri-state area, that know me, and you know that all helped. So I'm certainly there's still skeptics out there, but I know that people were much more apt to believe, at least locally, for those folks that know me and you know the diocese and so on. Now, I also believe that when you know I've done so many interviews over the past year, not quite a year, done coast to coast and everything. I think this, you know, the story does come across to people that hear me talk, and then subsequently those that actually read the book, as an absolutely true, credible story, as it is. And that's why it comes across as true and credible, because it is, and I tell it just as it took place, and certainly stand by it, and have challenged a number of people, skeptics and so on, these, you know, society of skepticism, and even some, you know, some college professors and so on. I've told them, you want to question me, you want to debate me, you want to try to grill me, knock yourself out. You know, I'll talk to anybody, and if they want to discredit me, let them try.
Right. I admire that, and I tell all my listeners all the time, like, demonic hauntings or demonic presence, any kind of situation like that, this is something you don't want to mess with, and it can backfire on you like there's no
tomorrow. Sure, and you know, that's a great point, and I think it's a very valid point. You know, these days, you know, after the television program Paranormal State and so on, you have all these ghost hunter clubs that have you know, paranormal societies and paranormal organizations that have popped up, and they're going to go out and investigate. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, or probably even higher than that, you're dealing with some type of a ghost. But if a demonic entity is encountered, that can be very dangerous. And it's nothing to be toyed with.
Exactly. When you first encountered your first signs of what you experienced, what were some of the things that stood out to you where you said, all right, there's something going on, I got to reach out to somebody? What were the first signs?
Well, I can tell you, you know, we lived in the house for, 15 years before it all hit the fan, so to speak. For years, we just, and I don't want to discount this by saying we just thought we lived in a haunted house. And I say that with a, you know, a level of, you know, that we knew that there was something with the house, that there was some type of a ghost, some kind of type of a spirit. My wife and I knew it first. Weeks after we moved into the house, and then as our children grew older and they experienced things, I want to say we kind of thought it was Casper the Friendly Ghost. You know, it didn't seem to be malevolent. It didn't seem to be threatening. It was a curiosity. It got to the point where it was kind of routine. It bothered you, but it didn't seem to be dangerous. But at the same time, there were things happening in the house with my family that I did not attribute to this spiritual entity. You know, mental problems with my wife, with my children, relationship problems, and these things continued to get worse and worse and worse as time went on. And it wasn't until we kind of had an explosion of a whole number of events that I correlated what was happening with us with this spirit. And it wasn't until the church, the Catholic Church, got involved, and there were, you know, trained priests that were assigned to assist us, that we came pretty quickly to the conclusion that this was not nice. This wasn't some type of a spirit or a ghost. This was a demonic entity. And then it just kind of unmasked itself. It was really like living with the invisible man. You know, this didn't have pretense of, you know, some ghost that was reliving some tragedy of the past or something. This was a malevolent, manipulative, first person, in your face entity that was making it clear to us its presence, and it was also trying to hurt us mentally and physically. So when I say it was like living with the invisible man, this thing was up close and personal. It was interactive, and it didn't have, you know, the attributes that you would generally assign to a kind of a ghost that you see now and then, you know, roaming down the hallway or something, appearing. This was an evil entity that was trying to drive us out, trying to hurt us, trying to kill us. And that went on for, you know, 2 years.
Wow. When you reached out to someone, did you guys reach out to, like, somebody local before you got Mr. Adam Bly and to help you guys? I'm a big huge fan of Adam Bly, by the way. I love his work. I met him in person a few years back, and he's a great person of religious faith, and, you know, he really stands by what he does. And what was it like to be working with him, and how intense was it to be under kind of his investigation?
Well, you know, the television program, The Exorcist Files, includes Adam. But at the time, I can tell you, at the time that I first encountered him, and he has since gone on to become a professional, you know, demonologist. He actually works for the Catholic Church now, training priests. But at the time I met him, there was a paranormal club at Penn State University that was headed by Ryan Buell, and it had, I don't know, you know, 9 or 10 students and graduate students a part of it. And when they came to the house, and the reason I was directed or suggested that I contact them, in some way the church found out of their existence. Again, this is back in 2004, before you had this plethora of groups that, you know, kind of do the same thing. And the church wanted a quasi, you know, kind of outside, if you want to use the word scientific, group to come in and to verify that there was, in fact, crazy stuff going on in our house. So Adam came with them, and he was at the time actually a staff advisor to this club of sorts. And what he experienced at our house was really his first encounter with the demonic, and it's what directed him or led him eventually to, you know, become a very religious student of demonology, and, you know, go to Rome and study, and, you know, became affiliated with a number of well-known exorcists. So Adam has gone on you know, to create this profession of his. But at the time he encountered it at our house, he was still basically a novice like the rest of them. Now, Ryan Buell and his group went on to have their television program, and Ryan, in fact, would make reference to our case, as he called it, in Pittsburgh. He called it the Pittsburgh Hellmouth. That's what he referred to it. But I had asked him not to identify us specifically as the family or the house, that he could make reference to us, as he did. But he would talk about this demonic entity that they had encountered early on in their encounters with the paranormal.
Right. Were you kind of like skeptics or non-believers before all this started happening, or did this like totally change your belief system? How did it affect you on a personal level, like as far as
it dramatically changed my whole outlook on life to an extent. I mean, I can't say that in the beginning that I didn't believe in ghosts. I mean, I'm obviously a religious person. I believe in God. I believe in the devil and angels. But I never had any encounter. I mean, my wife and I, before we moved in this house, never had any experience, you know, with anything paranormal. So when we began to experience, you know, ghostly type activity in the house, it kind of really freaked us out to begin with. When you come to that conclusion that your house, there's something in your house that's that is not normal, paranormal.
Yeah.
Now, to answer that question fully, once I went through the entire experience of, you know, dealing with this demonic entity, I mean, it was just, talk about a traumatic event. And again, remember, you're not talking just about a week or 2 weeks. This went on for over 2 years. And we lived in this house, and we had to deal with this stuff almost on a daily basis. It had a pattern on how it would operate, but so coming out the other end of it, I say that my faith has been so I don't really use the word faith anymore, because to me it's reality. I no longer, it's not I have faith that this is true. I know this is true, you know.
Sure.
So it's like seeing Jesus walk on the water. I'm sure the 12 apostles had a whole different view of, because they saw the miracles, they saw the supernatural. So I've seen the supernatural. I've been in the presence of this evil entity, you know, a minion of the devil, so to speak, and at the same time, I've experienced and utilized, you know, the weapons of good, the weapons of Christianity and, you know, the Bible and the church, and seen the impact that it has on evil. It works. So, I wasn't a Catholic when this started, but I always make reference to all the Catholic hocus pocus, you know, and the holy water and all that stuff that all seemed to be, you know, kind of simple medieval, you know, superstitions. But that holy water and incense and all, I mean, how and why it works. And I would hit this thing with holy water and it would dart across the room. It couldn't deal with it. So that's how it's impacted me. It's not so much faith, it's reality. And then what that does, it changes your whole outlook on life, on death, on living every day. So
yeah.
It's like I've had one foot in the supernatural world and one foot in the physical world. And that's what led me to say, I have to tell this story.
Sure. Yeah. And I can't imagine what your family felt through the whole experience too. What was their initial reaction when everything first started out? Like, how did they feel about all this stuff?
Well, again, you know, for years, as we knew that we thought it was just a ghost, you know, you kind of just learn to live with it. And they would have friends over who would never come back again and so on. But once it got to the point where we knew what we were dealing with, I mean, it was rough. And if I could go back and do anything different, I would have moved my kids, who were all teenagers at the time, I would have moved them out of the house. I should not have had them, because they were real collateral damage through this whole thing. At least, you know, my sons were, and collateral damage, and continue to be, you know, this whole thing. As I tell, I say, you know, writing a book like this is like writing a book. Well, really, it's not. Like, you write a book about the mob. Well, the devil and his minions are a lot more dangerous than the mob, but I say that just to say that, you know, this is dangerous, and I pray that we're protected, and we've already had some real tragedy in our family since the book was published, but, you know, we're in it. And,
It's something that's intense and, like you said, very dangerous, and can affect people in many different ways. Who was the first person that you actually tried to reach out to when you had enough and you said, all right, I got to call somebody? Was there a particular person that you had in mind?
Yeah, there was. And I tell this story in the book in pretty good detail, because it's interesting how it happened. Now, as I pointed out earlier, we weren't Catholic. And I initially went, and I don't say this to demean anything or anybody, but I just say it as a matter of fact that the Catholic Church, and I'm not saying I'm holding it up above other, you know, Christian denominations, but the organization has been around for 2,000 years and have dealt with a lot of things, and it stretches back to, you know, the ancient times. There's a lot of ancient knowledge and learning in the church concerning stuff like this. So I go to the pastor of our Protestant church at the time, and I tell him what's going on in the house, and, you know, he's counseling us and the family, and my kids are, you know, going crazy, and I start to try to explain to him, listen, there is some bad stuff in the house itself. I mean, you have stuff flying through the air, crashing on the walls and so on. I mean, that's, so I try to tell him that. He looks at me in disbelief, you know, questioning my sanity, and I said, you know, there's evil in that house, and that's what's, you know, affecting us, and that's what the root of our problems. And, you know, he thought I was trying to, you know, make it up, I guess. I don't know. But he finally admitted that there wasn't anything he really could do, nor did he want to get involved in anything like that. So just by coincidence, when I was in political office, and I'll tell this story quickly, even though I say more detail in the book. I became, a mile from our house is a convent of cloistered nuns. Now, these are like medieval nuns. They're cloistered. They go to a convent when they're young women, and they never leave, and all they do is pray. And you never see them, and it's really a as I said, it's something out of the Middle Ages. It's a mile, not even a mile from my house. And when I was in office, I would get these gifts all the time from different contractors and so on that did business with the county. You know, at Christmas time you get candy and hams and fruit baskets and, you know, more stuff than I knew what to do with. And so someone suggested to me that I should start giving this stuff to these nuns that were right near my house. Now, I had never been there, but I did that. And it was kind of a real mysterious thing. You didn't see anybody. You'd ring a bell and this little thing would open up and you'd put your stuff in there and it would close. And I did that for some time. And over a period of time, I met these very holy women. Now, the two times that Mother Teresa came to Pittsburgh, she stayed with these nuns, insisted that she stayed in this convent. So that tells you a little bit about, you know, their reputation. So I told you all that to tell you that a couple years later, after I was done with politics, the first person I called was the Mother Superior of this convent. And I told her what was happening, and I asked her her advice, and she diagnosed it pretty quick right over the phone. And she said, it sounds like you have a demonic infestation in your house. She told me who to go to and what to do. I went to the a monastery in Pittsburgh. Two priests initially began to help us, and then eventually, as I had pointed out earlier, the bishop got involved and assigned yet another priest, and the Catholic Church was all in, so to speak. So I, to answer your initial question, I initially went to this very holy, devout Catholic nun who kind of started the process, you know, in the beginning.
At least she was able to find you some help and
yeah,
reach out.
You know, she just talked to me as a matter of fact, you know. It wasn't...
Yeah.
Any questioning my sanity or anything. If she knew me, and unlike the pastor of the church that we had belonged to, you know, had no concept of what I was talking about or what to do. And again, I don't say that to belittle anybody, but it was clear that he didn't know what to do.
What things, if you could have done things differently, you know, regarding going backward, I guess, what things would have you have done differently if you could have?
Well, as I said before, the main thing I would have done was to move my kids out of the house. You know, but the thing is, you know, I thought that, you know, I'm in a war. Anything I do in moving our family out, even if I stay and my wife stay, it's still retreat. We are retreating. And I just didn't, I wasn't prepared to give in. Now, again, you know, I'm ready to fight. My wife was with me, even though eventually we were worn down to the point where we were going to quit at one point as well. But to have the my three sons at the time all were affected by this in negative ways. And so that's definitely something I would have done different. Now, I have a lot more knowledge now about how this stuff, at least, you know, to an extent that you can understand some of it, how it works. You know, for a couple, number of months, we were basically flying by the seat of our pants in trying to see what worked. And eventually, coming to understand how we could make its existence in our house as difficult and miserable as, you know, it was trying to do to us. You know, you if you're in a war and you're getting battered around, or if you're in a boxing ring, you want to get a few hits in. And after a while, we determined and understood how to do that. So, you know, I understand that a lot better now. And looking back on it, would I have done things differently? Could I have done things differently? Certainly. But I didn't know then what I know now.
Right, right. How long did it take for things to kind of diminish or go away in the house?
Well, things really kicked off in December of 2003. And by January of 2004, 1 year, it was terrible. And at that point in time, we were ready to just give up. This thing was really kind of having its way with us. And it was funny, when I first started to talk to one of the priests, he said to me at that point in time, in a year, we'll know what progress we're making. And I certainly didn't want to hear that. I thought, you know, it would be like calling in Roto-Rooter or, you know, the Terminex. They would come in and they'd do their thing and clean the house out and, you know, maybe come back once or twice and it would be over. I didn't realize, you know, the depth of this. And also I did not fully understand that the battle really had to be waged by us. You know, the priests would come every 7 to 10 days and they would do their thing, you know, all the different ritual, which generally would make things worse, you know.
Right.
And then we would have to continue to fight it. But once we came to understand how to fight it, and that second year in 2005, from January of 2005 until, you know, January of 2006, that was a whole different situation. And finally, the final confrontation took place in February of 2006. So I think we really made some headway in early 2005. And that really coincided with the visit from, you know, Ryan Buell and Adam Bly and that whole group of paranormal folks, because it's like we really kind of lanced the boil, so to speak. They really got this thing mad when they were with us.
Wow. What are you doing these days? How are you reflecting back on the situation, and what are you trying to teach onto others?
Well, you know, I'm doing a lot of interviews like this, and we got a couple television programs that are going to air either, you know, this year or next year. In fact, we're going to do another one here next month. I want to tell this story, and whether it be, you know, on tape or over, you know, an interview, the story that I want to tell is that, you know, this stuff is dangerous, but it's true, and that good and evil are real, and that, you know, it's kind of like the movie The Matrix, I like to say. You know, we live in this world where there's a whole unseen supernatural world around us, you know, that's filled with good and evil, you know, angels and demons. And we're kind of in the middle of it all, and we're the focus of it all. And I believe that it brings a whole different understanding of what takes place in the world and why it takes place, evil, so to speak. And and that good in fact can prevail, but all the stories of the devil and God and angels and demons, that's not conjecture, that's not, you know, superstitious stories. I can attest it's all true. And whatever scientists who want to just say that, you know, we live, we die, and that's all there is, and that we're nothing more than another species, that's baloney. We're spirit, and we're soul, and there's a whole lot going on here than just living and dying.
Right, right. And I kind of like what you said earlier, just before your last statement, about how your family had to fight, you know, you guys had to fight it, and that's how it kind of, I guess, made it go away eventually. And you're right. I think, in my opinion, it's all about the person's intent, and it's our intent and what we want to do with that particular situation, whether it be a demonic haunting or a regular haunting, depending on your intent, is how intense your experience are going to be. And depending on what your intent is, that's how they will react to you, so to speak. I don't know if you know what I mean, but...
Yeah, I mean, it was pushing back as hard as it could, and when we would hit it, it would hit back at us. And it wasn't until, I want to say, things got routine, but it got to the point where, one, we knew that we could strike back at it, and two, that it didn't terrify us. I would converse with this thing, but I would always do it in the name of Jesus Christ, and I would always, because I didn't want it to think that I was the one, this is a supernatural being, who am I by myself? Like I say, if I faced a lion or a grizzly bear, I'd run away. But if I had a high-powered rifle, I'd be a lot more confident to face it. Well, as long as I had, you know, the weapons of the church and Jesus and the supernatural weapons, I could, in fact, confront this thing and talk to it and tell it, we are not going to leave, you are going to leave. And no matter how long that takes, we're not leaving, you're going to leave. And when it would pull its supernatural stunts and do, you know, one time, it liked to throw this stuff on the walls and on the furniture that looked like blood. And one time it put it on one of my starched white shirts. I had taken it off. I wore a white shirt to work every day, and I would hang them on a clothes tree before I took them back to the cleaners, and it put a streak of this red substance down the back of my shirt. Again, trying to terrify me, impress me, and I talked to it. I said, look what you did. You know what? I'm not impressed. This doesn't frighten me. And furthermore, I'm telling you, you're not going to stay in this house. And you can throw this stuff all around that you want, but you know what? I don't care. And it was that attitude, I believe, that finally, worked against it.
Cool. And I'm happy that it did. From what you've experienced was pretty intense, and I'm happy for your family and for yourself that you're out of harm's way finally. Are you still involved in politics? Like, what's your path nowadays, now that you've been through all this and with your book that you have now? What's your path?
Well, I mean, you mean professionally?
Either way.
Well, I mean, certainly I wrote this book, and, you know, it's gotten so much attention and is going to continue to get attention, and, you know, that becomes like almost like another like mini career. I mean, I do interviews like this all the time, whether, you know, Skype or the phone or, you know, in person. I'm going to be flying to Green Bay here a week after next to, you know, meet with a group out there and talk to them, and then I'm going to be on some radio station in Green Bay as well. So this has become, again, somewhat of a mini career. We have another television program that's going to be taped next month. There's talk of a movie, and but my concern and my focus is that when this story is told, whether when it's told on TV or it's told as a movie, that it's told as I write the book, as I wrote the book, that the underlying message is one of not just a haunted house, not just paranormal activity. The story is that good and evil are for real. And this stuff was evil. And that's my focus. And, you know, if that becomes the purpose of, you know, of my life, that's wonderful. Now, as far as what I do professionally, as many former politicians, you know, politics is no longer, you know, I'm no longer in it. It's my business. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm still involved in politics to a certain extent. I have a consulting company, and I consult in politics.
Right. That's cool. I commend you for that and respect you that you can, you know, do both, be involved in the paranormal realm and also focus on that end as well. I'm sure it's hard. I'm sure you get questioned a lot by your colleagues, like, you know, what's going on with that subject? And
you know,
I'm
not
sure
really. Every now and then, if it comes up, you know, because I certainly don't bring it into professional conversations. If,
right,
you know, sometimes they'll mention, hey, you know, read your book. If someone brings it up, I'll certainly address it. Like my wife
right.
and I were at a function last Saturday. It was one of my clients had a picnic, and she said she heard people saying, oh, that's the guy who wrote the book. That's the guy. But I'm not, you know, I'm you know, just going about my life and my business. And if people bring it up to me, I'll certainly talk about it. But, you know, it's kind of separate.
That's cool. I can respect that. I know me and you, we've been conversing back and forth during the interview. And my partner in crime is always left in the background, like as if I forget about him. He's there. Tim.
No, that's okay. You're doing fine. This is really good. This is really interesting.
Yeah. Tim, you have any questions for Bob?
I just, the thing that I guess I kept coming to my mind was, what do you think it wanted? I mean, do you think it was you? Do you think it was,
you know,
do you think it was there and you ran into it? Or do you think
because this is when it gets kind of bizarre. And, if you read the book tells you, okay, now why? Why was this thing in the house to begin with? Why was it in our house, and what was the history of it, and, you know, what was its purpose? And, you know, I came to know some very devout, holy folks at part of the Catholic diocese and church that are really kind of pretty amazing, a Catholic intuitive, as she's called. And it was absolutely amazing, her insight on what was going on in the spiritual realm and why this thing was there and what it was trying to do. But she said that ultimately, and this is, you know, take it or leave it, but that this battle was destined to happen, you know, long ago, even before I was born. You know, I was drawn to this house. It's in the town where I grew up, and I was drawn to this house from my very first memories, you know, as a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old. I was always fascinated with this house, and she said that this ultimate battle that was going to take place between good and evil, that I, in some way, it was, you know, divine providence, that I was going to eventually come back to this town that I left when I graduated from college, and I was going to get this house I was fascinated with, and eventually I would confront this evil that occupied it. And why, you say? Because of what's happening right now, that this story is really a story that's pertinent for our times, and that she said this story is going to be told, it's going to be known internationally, and that's the purpose. And it's to broadcast, you know, the truth of good and evil, God and the devil. And I don't want to sound, you know, melodramatic or anything. I'm just saying what, you know, I was told, and it kind of makes sense. I mean, that's what's happening, you know. And as I continued to do interviews, and I, you know, I was kind of prepared, I think, with my my background, my education. I mean, I can do these interviews. I can sound credible. You know, probably one of the biggest accomplishments was getting that book published. Not even, you know, writing it was the easy part. To figure out the publishing world and getting, you know, Penguin Random House to publish it, I mean, that was, not being a professional writer, that was a real challenge. And I just persevered, got it done, and thus, you know, the story's being told, and I can only say it seems like she's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Has anybody else had, or and maybe, was there any stories about anybody else before you or since then or any neighbors? Like,
well,
has it leaked over?
I did my best through this to kind of verify stories that I was told about the house. I did, in fact, speak with. Now, the people who sold us the house, they would never talk to us again. When I went to try to ask them about things that, you know, we had experienced to see what they had experienced, it was like, let me get back to you, you know, because they
mm-hmm.
knew what they were selling us. And obviously there was a, you know, they were uncomfortable with that. But people, a woman who grew up in the house and had sold, was her mother had sold the house to the people who sold it to us, and she grew up in the house in the 1940s into the 50s, she did admit to me and tell me things that took place from the very beginning when they moved in. And now the original owners of the house were long deceased. I couldn't talk to them, but I pulled together enough information that's in the book, my research, and verifying different things that I was told. And again, I was a military intelligence officer when I was in the Army. I know how to deal with facts, and I know how to, you know, deal with pieces of information and put them together to paint a picture, so to speak. And I think that was just another part of the preparation that I was given to experience this, to understand it, to write about it, and to eventually, you know, represent it as I'm doing now.
Right. And you're doing an awesome job. And again, I totally respect you for serving our country, and I want to just personally thank you for that. And also
sure.
thank you for leading our country as being in politics and all that, being a former politician and still being involved, whatever it is that, you know, you're leading the way. But we're coming down to the end of the interview here, Bob. I wish we had more time, but we only have so much here on Blog Talk Radio. Are there any events or projects that you would like to share with our listeners where they can, you know, maybe where they can get your book? Is there an event you'd like to share with them that you're going to be
hearing? Yeah, well, obviously, and I guess I should have mentioned this from the beginning. I get into these interviews. It's the name of the book is The Demon of Brownsville Road. The Demon of Brownsville Road. You know, the house is on Brownsville Road. And, you know, initially you're trying to think, what's the name of a book? What should the name be? And kind of like, you know, the Amityville Horror, you have a place name that people can identify with. Now, in the end, Brownsville Road really was a part of the story. I didn't get into this. I'll mention it quickly, but it's in the book. There was a massacre that took place in what is the front yard of our house now, back in the late 1700s during an Indian War. And that was right along Brownsville Road, which went to, at the time, Fort Pitt, which eventually became Pittsburgh. It's fascinating. I can't tell you the names of the television programs. They get worked up about it. Two very well known television programs on different cable networks that will be appearing on probably this year, next year. And then at the same time, as I said, we just recently signed a contract with a production company that's putting together the concept of a movie, and then what they're going to do is attempt to sell it to one of the big studios. So I can't say there's going to be a movie, but it, you know, things look pretty positive at this point. It, you know, for a long time I couldn't say that there was going to be a book, but eventually there was. So it all comes in time, and you just have to be patient, and you know.
Right. Is there a website that people can learn about?
Yeah, well, that's another great question. We have a website called demonofbrownsville.com, and that has all the a lot of media links. It has links to both Amazon.com, Barnes and Noble. I mean, this book is available on, you know, pretty much any website that sells books. You know, most Barnes and Nobles have it. I know the ones in Pittsburgh can't keep it in stock. And again, that's an advantage of being with a major publisher. It's available. But demonofbrownsville.com, and then there's also a link from the website to our Facebook page, which is my son keeps it up, and it has, you know, over 5,000 followers, and really every interview I do, he some way ends up putting it on Facebook. So between the Facebook page and the website itself, which has, as I said, excerpts from the book, it has a whole number of television coverage. You know, Fox covered it, ABC covered it, CBS covered it, local newspapers covered it, so they can also
wow,
you know, see all that.
Congrats to you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for being on our show again. It's been a pleasure, and it's been an honor to host you on our show, and I hope we were a pleasurable host to you. And
yeah, good interview. I've done so many. You know, the most awkward thing is something, you know, I get on someone and they, well, okay, nice to meet you, tell us your story, you know. it's a lot easier when people ask very direct questions that you can answer, and it time goes fast, and it's a lot easier than having to just kind of talk.
Yeah, I try to be fluent. I give my guests, you know, ample time to get what they want to get out there, and you know, I give them as much respect as possible, because that's, you know, in retrospect, it's really all about you guys, not about us. And you know, a lot of talk shows like to talk about themselves more than their guests, and you know, I don't think it should be that way. But you know, this is about you, and I'm just thankful to have you on as our guest. And you know, again,
well, it was enjoyable. Thank you, and it's easy. You know, when I was on Coast to Coast, I was on for 3 hours straight. That was a challenge.
Yeah.
3 hours straight.
I'm kind of glad we only do an hour and a half. So, but Bob, I hope to be in touch with you in the future. Hopefully,
yep.
any future projects that you do, we'd love to have you back on the show. I'm in touch with your PR person, and you know, hopefully we can get in touch with you again in the future.
Yeah, that's fine. I appreciate it, and I'm not in town tonight. I'm glad you agreed to do it on the phone, because I do these on Skype, but I have Skype in my office in Pittsburgh, and I'm not there, so this was easier.
No, no problem at all. Yeah, we have our own dial number, so yeah, it's been great. I wish you a lot of luck in all your projects, and you know, blessings to you and your family, and you know, good luck to you in your professional career as well.
Thank you so much. Nice meeting both of you.
Yeah,
good night.
Same to you. And
yes, thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that was great. Oh, you're still there. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll hang out in the background.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I hope met your expectations. Okay.
All
bye-bye.
Right. No problem. Bye-bye. All right. Tim, what'd you think?
That's very interesting.
Hope everybody enjoyed our Bob Cranmer. He was the author of The Demon of Brownsville Road. Again, you can go to his website for more information. You can go to... I had it here for a second, but I lost it. Brownsville Road Demon.com or something like that. I'll put it in on our Facebook again. Anyway, I hope everybody enjoyed our guest. He's intense about what he went through, and, you know, like I said, he's believable because of his background, and he's a credible person, being in the military and in politics, and, you know, I really do respect him, Tim, for coming forward with such a story, because that would totally hurt your career.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, it was a great show. Want to talk about our upcoming guests, as we always do at the end of the show. So let me get my calendar out and see what's going on.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Wow, I can't believe it's the end of June, Tim.
I know.
I don't want summer to go fast. All right, well, we're going to have an encore presentation on July 3rd because I don't want to ruin everybody's 4th of July weekend. And me and Tim agreed to play an encore presentation of a past episode. And if you missed tonight's episode, maybe we'll play tonight. I don't know. We'll think of something. I believe we're going to try to get Kenny Biddle back on July 10th. We're going to give him a shout-out and see if he can come on. July 17th, we're going to have three people from the Ryan Institute who are researchers involved in researching people with ESP and also people that have experiences with PSI. I can't wait for this show, Tim, because, like I said, this is as close to scientists as we're going to get.
For now. Yeah.
But the guests that we're going to have on July 17th are Sally Ryan Feather, Susan Freeman, and I hope I can get this name correctly. If I don't, I will learn how to pronounce her name. Or he. I don't, well. Goncalo Viega. I think the last name is German, so I'm going to say Viega or Viga.
Mm-hmm.
Close enough. So, I'm real excited for that because, again, this is from a well-known institute. I believe they're based, Tim, out of Duke University.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Ryan Research Center, and it's in
Duke's Durham. Good school.
Yeah, Durham, North Carolina. And I can't wait for that.
That'll be really good.
Yeah, I can't wait. July 24th and the 31st, Tim's going to fly solo.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't wait for that. Maybe he'll have a special guest co-host. Then on August 7th, Tim, guess what's returning?
What's that?
We're going to have our 4th annual Knights of the Roundtable.
Well, I like that.
And I have some really cool guests for our 4th annual Knights of the Roundtable. For those who are not familiar with our Knights of the Roundtable special, I decided recently that, Tim, I think we should do this once per season because it's just so much fun to discuss, like, theories and ideas with other fellow colleagues in the paranormal community, whether they be investigators, you know, a psychic or, you know, whatever their background is. We all kind of just debate about different subjects, but we do it in a Knights of the Roundtable fashion. And it's kind of cool. It's a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
So far, for our Knights of the Roundtable special, it's going to be 2 hours. It's going to be on August 7th, and it's going to be from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. We're going to have my mentor, who's a returnee. He's going to be returning. He's always on our Knights of the Roundtable special, and he is Chip Rankenfall, the author of Even the Dead Won't Tell You the Truth, and he also hosts a new show called Understanding the Fringe on darkmatterradio.net. He's a mentor of mine, as you guys know from time to time. He helps us out here on Paranormal Talk Radio with Tim. Can't do the show, he fills in for Tim, so he helps me out from time to time. So we're going to have Chip Reichenthal. We're going to have Mark Kies, who wrote the book Chasing Shadows. Mark Kies is a police officer in Pennsylvania. And he also runs a group called the PPA, which has also been on the Discovery Network, also on Animal Planet, on a show called The Haunted. So that'll be fun. And we also have Chris DeCesare is also going to be part of that, and Michael Diamond.
Like it.
How do you like them apples?
How do you like them apples? I do. Those are fun. I like that. It'll be good. Hopefully some people will join in the chat and call in and questions and see what they have to say.
Yeah, I can't wait.
It'll be a hoot.
I'm going to try to really do things a little bit different than the last time. I know, Tim, I think you couldn't do the last one, right? The last one?
Right, I couldn't. There was something going on.
Yeah. You can't miss this one. This one's going to be fun. And for those who are not familiar with Michael Diamond, he's the founder or co-founder of ParanormalWarehouse.com, the big social networking website for the paranormal. You guys can share audio, video. They got a forum where you can communicate and talk paranormal shop with other fellow investigators or enthusiasts alike. It's free to join. Again, it's ParanormalWarehouse.com. And, again, it's free. And he's always looking for people to register and go on there and share all your stuff. They also have a blog area where you can blog away whatever you want to blog about. You can write your own blog on there, which I think is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Love that site.
Tim and I are also administrators to the forum on ParanormalWarehouse.com. So I got to mention that. I got to plug us, Tim.
Well, yeah, it's really good. One of the things I love about it is, I always say this, is just it's really family friendly. So, within reason, every now and then there's some nice words given back and forth. And of course, when you capture an EVP or something on video that might have harsher than normal language, they still put it up for evidence review, which I think was fair. But so far, we've just been removing spam, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. People who post stuff that's a bunch of crap. And we don't want crap on that website. We want good stuff on the website.
That's right.
So, I guess we'll end the show.
Hey! We'll end the show.
I know, what'd you think? Good guest?
Great guest.
Awesome guest.
Great guest. Demons and stuff that's kind of out there for me. My feelings on it. But it's always good to hear. It's always good to listen to experiences. And, something that I didn't think about that I was thinking when I was listening was, was there any post-traumatic, stress?
Yeah.
After that, it must have been pretty bad to live like that.
Again, with somebody with his background, him being involved with politics and, military background, law enforcement background, and to him to reach out and say, listen, I got something strange going on here where I got, and of all things, a demonic presence, I think is really telling on his end that somebody like that could come forward and talk about that in the public eye, because I can't imagine the type of ridicule and criticism that you might get from his fellow colleagues or where you live in general,
Yeah. I always have this imaginary timeline in my head. There was it's almost like pre-taps and post-taps. when the TV show came out. And pre-TAPS was it just wasn't normalized. And post-TAPS, it began to become more normal, I guess. I can remember in my job, I haven't even said anything. Just I remember some supervisors, I think in a playful manner, but, kind of being a little serious, giving me the first time they hear, if I ever get questioned on the stand about paranormal investigation, they're going to let me have it. And, that's the kind of worry that they had. And, they were that worried about it.
Right.
And now, not so much.
Right. Well, look at Andrea Perón's situation, when she came out with the movie. Well, not her. She didn't come out with the movie. But when they made the movie and she came out with the book, the town kind of went haywire about everything in the book. And, I guess depending on where you live or what you do for a living, it can really take a toll on where you live and what you do.
It could. Yeah, it's just, you got to be able to handle it if you're going to do it.
Exactly. So, I don't know, if there was really bad audio issues, I hope somebody can email me because I can only kind of like hear me and Tim and my guests, so I don't know how I sound to my listeners. So if there's any audio issues, please email me at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com or message us on Facebook, that's fine, and let us know if there were some real issues with my new headset, because I just bought a new headset, and I was kind of hoping it would like work out really well, and so far there's some bugs, but I'm trying to get the bugs out.
Yeah.
But
we'll
get it. Good show. I didn't say like a lot, but I think I said a lot, and I'm working on that.
I'm very cautious now. So there you go. See, I'm thinking about it. But hey, we're working towards making it better, and that's what we love about it is the feedback. And we really are. So we take the feedback seriously. We want to deliver a better show. So, let us know. It's an evolving process. And I think over time, we'll get better.
We'll knock it out of the park.
There'll be some point in our life when we'll point in which direction it's going to go.
You got it.
Just like Babe Ruth.
All right. Well, until the next time. So then there'll be no show next week. Right? Next week is July 3rd.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, everybody's going to be traveling.
Yeah. All right. So no show next week, but we'll be back on the 10th with Kitty Biddle, hopefully. And I don't know. The show will go on.
The show will go on.
That's right. Everybody has a good weekend. And
yes, safe weekend.
And as always, don't do anything that I wouldn't do. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.
Yes. Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.